All right, ready to dive into another fascinating case. This time, we're going all the way back to 1866, a time of, well, let's just say intense transition in the U.S. And this Supreme Court case, Ex parte Milligan, it's not just a history lesson.
No, it really isn't. It's about as relevant today as it was back then, maybe even more so.
Exactly. I mean, think about it. You're a civilian living in a state where courts are functioning just fine, and suddenly, boom, you're facing a military tribunal. And not just for any charge. We're talking about a potential death sentence.
That was the very real situation Lambda Milligan found himself in. And this all happened during the Civil War. Milligan was a civilian in Indiana, a Union state. Keep that in mind.
Indiana, not exactly a battlefield,
Yeah.
right? So what on earth was the military doing getting involved in civilian matters there?
Well, tensions were sky high during the war. The authorities suspected Milligan of being part of a group called the Sons of Liberty, which was thought to be sympathetic to the Confederacy and even potentially involved in some plots against the Union.
Sons of Liberty. Sounds like something out of a history book, but I guess back then it was front page news. So they just decided to skip the whole regular trial process, just hand them over to the military.
That's exactly what happened. Instead of facing a civilian court, Milligan was tried by a military commission. And get this, they sentenced him to hang.
Hank, seriously, that's intense. I'm guessing that's where Ex parte Milligan comes into play, right? This is when it all goes to the Supreme Court.
You got it. And this case, it was a game changer. The Supreme Court, in a unanimous decision, basically said, nope, you can't just ignore the Constitution because there's a war on. Milligan set a major precedent. It established very specific rules about when the military can actually have jurisdiction over civilians.
Okay, so the Supreme Court basically stepped in and said, whoa, hold on a minute. You can't just execute this guy without due process. So what were these rules, these criteria for military jurisdiction? They didn't just say no and leave it at that, did they?
Oh, they were very specific. The Milligan decision laid out a clear test. First, civilian courts actually have to be closed, not just operating under some pressure. Second, there has to be an actual invasion or rebellion happening that requires martial law, not just the fear of one. And third, even then, any military authority is limited strictly to the actual conflict zone.
So, applying that to Milligan's case, Indiana had functioning courts. It wasn't under attack or occupied. It seems pretty clear-cut that the military overstepped its boundaries, right?
You're absolutely right. And the Supreme Court saw that. They were sending a very strong message. The Constitution doesn't just disappear during wartime. One of the justices even wrote, "The Constitution covers with the shield of its protection all classes of men, at all times and under all circumstances."
Powerful stuff. So the court basically drew a line in the sand with Milligan, right? Said, here's where the military's power ends. But
I have a feeling it's not that simple, is it? I mean, things rarely are when it comes to legal precedents. You're right about that. There's another layer to this story, a bit of a wrinkle, you could say. You see, while the court was unanimous in its decision, Chief Justice Salmon Chase, he wrote a separate opinion, a concurring opinion.
a concurring opinion. So they all agreed that the military messed up in Milligan's case, but there was some disagreement about something else.
Exactly. They agreed the military court had no business trying Milligan, but what Chase suggested was, well, he hinted that maybe Congress could step in and say, okay, in certain extreme national emergencies, the military can try civilians, even if civilian courts are open.
Hold on. So even though the court was so firm in Milligan, Case was kind of leaving the door open a crack. That seems, well, a little bit worrying.
It definitely raises some very important questions. This whole debate, this tension between national security and individual liberty, it's a thread that runs throughout American history. And Chase's concurring opinion, well, let's just say it adds fuel to that fire. Milligan throws down the gauntlet, but then Chase adds a, but maybe. It's a fascinating legal puzzle. And in the next part of our deep dive, we're going to explore how later cases, especially those after 9/11, really grappled with these exact issues.
Okay, so we've established that Ex parte Milligan set a pretty clear precedent about the limits of military power. But like we were saying, things get complicated. How has Milligan held up over time? Has it always been followed?
Well, let's just say that putting principles into practice is always a bit more challenging than just writing them down on paper. And Milligan, it's been tested a lot.
Yeah, I can imagine. Especially during times of crisis. I'm thinking World War II, for instance. That seems like a pretty big test.
You're right on the money. World War II is a prime example of how Milligan's principles, well, they didn't always prevail. Take the case of Korematsu of the United States in 1944.
Korematsu. That's the case about the internment of Japanese Americans, right?
Mm-hmm.
A pretty dark chapter in U.S. history.
Absolutely. And, you know, Fred Korematsu, a U.S. citizen, he actually directly referenced Ex parte Milligan in his challenge against the internment order.
So he was saying, hey, this is just like Milligan. You can't detain citizens without a trial, especially when the courts are open. It seems pretty straightforward. What happened?
Sadly, the Supreme Court didn't see it that way. In Korematsu, they actually upheld the internment order. They argued basically that because it was wartime and there were concerns about espionage, that the government's actions, even though they were extreme, were justified.
Wow. So Milligan, this landmark decision about protecting individual rights, it didn't hold up. That's pretty disheartening.
It is. It's a reminder that legal precedents, even strong ones, they don't always guarantee protection, especially when fear takes over. And unfortunately, that tension between security and liberty, it didn't end with World War II.
No, I guess not. I'm guessing this takes us to the post-9/11 world, another time of fear and uncertainty.
You got it. And that period, well, it really put Milligan to the test again, perhaps even more so than World War II. Guantanamo Bay, that's where things get particularly interesting.
Guantanamo. Yeah, that was, and still is, a really controversial place. How did Milligan play into all that?
Remember how the Bush administration claimed Guantanamo was outside the jurisdiction of U.S. courts? They were trying to create this legal gray area, you could say?
A legal gray area, right.
Yeah.
So how did lawyers for the detainees, how did they use Milligan to fight back against that?
They argued that based on Milligan, you can't just indefinitely detain people without trial, especially when they're not even being held in an active war zone. They were basically saying, hey, you can't just pick a spot on the map and say the Constitution doesn't apply there.
So were they successful? Did the Supreme Court actually weigh in on this whole Guantanamo situation?
Oh, they definitely did. And this is where it gets really fascinating. Milligan, the seemingly old case, it came roaring back to life in cases like Rasul v. Bush and Hamdi v. Rumsfeld. The Supreme Court, they pushed back against the Bush administration's claims of unlimited authority.
So even in the context of terrorism, the court was saying, no, these detainees still have rights. That's pretty significant.
Hugely significant. And Milligan, it played a key role in shaping those decisions. The court was basically saying that even when dealing with suspected terrorists, you can't just throw due process out the window. Judicial oversight, that's crucial, even in tough cases.
So it seems like every time the government tries to sidestep the Constitution during a crisis, Milligan pops up like, nope, remember me. Pretty amazing how this one case keeps coming back. But, you know, didn't Congress grant the president some pretty broad powers after 9/11?
They did. Remember the Authorization for Use of Military Force, the AUMF? That gave the president a lot of leeway in how to deal with suspected terrorists. And this is where that maybe from Chief Justice Chase and Milligan.
Well, that's where it gets really interesting.
Oh, right. Chase and his little, what if Congress says it's okay? So did Congress essentially do what he suggested? They authorized military tribunals even though we had functioning courts.
But that's exactly what happened. And it led to another huge legal showdown, one that built directly on Ex parte Milligan, the case of Boumediene v. Bush.
Boumediene v. Bush. Okay, now we're getting into some serious legal territory. What was the main issue there?
The core question was whether Guantanamo detainees had the right to challenge their detention in federal court. See, the Military Commissions Act of 2006, it tried to strip them of that right. And guess what? Milligan took center stage in the legal arguments yet again.
It's like Milligan is this legal time traveler popping up in every major crisis where individual rights are at stake. So what happened in Boumediene? Did Milligan prevail? It did. In a major victory for due process, the Supreme Court struck down that part of the Military Commissions Act. They drew a direct line back to Milligan and said, no, you can't block detainees from accessing civilian courts. It was a huge moment.
Wow, Milligan, a case from the 1860s, shaping legal decisions about Guantanamo Bay in the 21st century. That's incredible. But let's be real for a second. The world's changing so fast. New threats are emerging all the time. Can Milligan really keep up? Is it strong enough to protect us today? So we've gone from the Civil War to World War II, all the way to Guantanamo Bay. It seems like Ex parte Milligan, it's more than just a historical curiosity, isn't it? It's like this legal compass that keeps pointing us back to the Constitution whenever things get a little, well, messy. But here's the million-dollar question. Can a case from 1866 really protect us in today's world?
It's the question, isn't it? The world today, I mean, it's a completely different landscape than what they were dealing with back in Milligan's time. But that core tension, that push and pull between security and liberty, that's, well, that's human nature. That's always going to be there. And Milligan, I think it offers a really powerful framework for how we navigate that tension.
So you're saying it's not just some dusty old legal relic. It actually has, like, practical implications for us right here, right now.
Absolutely. I mean, just think about the kinds of debates we're having right now. Government surveillance, data privacy, drones, all of these issues where, you know, national security interests, they bump up against individual rights.
Yeah. Okay. I'm starting to see it. So you're saying, Milligan, a case from before the internet even existed, it's actually relevant to the digital age.
That's the thing about these landmark cases, right? They grapple with these really big fundamental principles that, well, they go beyond any specific technology or time period. Due process, judicial oversight, limits on executive power, all of these things, they're at the heart of Milligan. And they're just as crucial today in the world of cyber warfare and counterterrorism as they were during the Civil War.
It's pretty mind-blowing to think about, isn't it? A case from 1866 speaking to these super complex 21st century problems. But let's be real. There are some people out there who would say, look, in a world with threats like terrorism, cyber attacks, pandemics, maybe we need to give the government a little more leeway, even if it means bending the rules a bit.
That's a very common argument, and it's one that's been used throughout history, right, to justify all sorts of, well, overreach by those in power. But Milligan, I think it reminds us that when we start sacrificing fundamental freedoms in the name of security, we're stepping onto a very slippery slope. It's easy to prioritize safety over liberty when you're scared, but history shows us, well, that can be a very dangerous path.
So Milligan is kind of like a warning sign, a reminder that we can't let fear chip away at the very foundations of our democracy.
I like that, yeah. A warning sign. It's about staying vigilant even when, or maybe especially when, we feel threatened. That urge to compromise on those core rights when there's a crisis, it's understandable. But Milligan, it's a really potent reminder of why we need to fight that urge.
It's remarkable how much power a single court case can have. But is Milligan bulletproof? I mean, could the Supreme Court overturn it or, you know, reinterpret it in a way that weakens those protections?
It's definitely a valid question. No legal precedent. It's set in stone forever, right? The Supreme Court, they can always go back, revisit past decisions, reinterpret things. That's what makes legal scholarship so interesting. It's a constant evolution and ongoing conversation.
So the fate of Milligan and all that it stands for, it kind of rests in the hands of the court.
In a way, yes. But it's important to remember that the court, it doesn't exist in a bubble. Public opinion, politics, social movements, all of these things, they influence how the law is understood and used. So it's really up to all of us to be engaged, to be informed, to advocate for the kind of society we want to live in.
Now, it's striking me now that Milligan, it's more than just a legal case. It's symbolic, right? Of this constant tug of war between power and individual liberty.
That's a great way to put it. Ex parte Milligan is a story about the power of the Constitution, the importance of judicial review, and the role of citizens in protecting our freedoms. It reminds us that eternal vigilance, it's the price of liberty.
Wow. I think I'm walking away from this deep dive with a whole new understanding of Ex parte Milligan.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just about some legal battle from the past. It's about our values, our choices, who we are as a nation.
I agree. And I hope our listeners feel the same way. Ex parte Milligan, it might feel like a relic from a different era, but its message, it's timeless. Even when we're afraid, even when the stakes are high, it's our commitment to the rule of law, to due process, to the fundamental rights of every individual. That's what truly defines us.
Well, thanks for taking us on this incredible journey through legal history. It's given me a lot to think about. And for our listeners out there, keep those minds curious, stay engaged, and we'll catch you on our next deep dive.